This is a very significant event, not only to the American struggle, but to the struggle worldwide. Because it is happening at a historic moment when the United States, for the first time since the end of the Second World War, has complete hegemony on the rest of the world. This is a very, very dangerous moment in history. And we are seeing what is happening in the Gulf. It is only an expression of what can happen if the people, especially black community in this country, are not prepared to combat that. I've known Malcolm also at a very interesting moment. I met him for the first time in Cairo when there was a crucial meeting of the second summit of the OAU, as well as the summit of non-aligned movement, which was to follow immediately after that. Malcolm came to my in a very ambivalent mood, because at that very moment Harlem was burning. The youth and the uprising in Harlem were calling for Malcolm. This was in July 1964. And Malcolm was in two minds. He wanted to go back, to come back and lead the struggle and be with the people in the struggle. But we wanted him to remain there in the conference so as to give us the feeling of the struggle and to convey to all these third world leaders what America, the real America, was going through. I'm glad to report that we succeeded in detaining him there. But this meeting of the Afro-Asian Solidarity also gave us an insight into Malcolm's own evolution. As you know, Malcolm started as a political struggle at the community level. But he evolved into a national and international figure precisely because his politics was at the same time evolving. Bill Fletcher yesterday talked about Malcolm's appreciation of the Bandung Conference of 1955. Malcolm had the vision to see the threat of a united third world country would pose to imperialism. And that threat has been expressed continuously since the end of the Second World War. For instance, although the American imperialism was fighting against communism, so-called, but throughout this period, you'd find that every American president had to have a third world country leader as a villain. They never fought the Russians. Truman had Kim Il-sung, the North Korean leader, as the villain, and he mobilized American forces and international forces to fight this villain. Eisenhower had Mao Zedong as a villain, not the Russian, but Mao Zedong. Kennedy had Castro as the villain, not the Russian, but Castro. Then came Johnson, he had Ho Chi Minh as the villain, not the Russian, but Ho Chi Minh as the villain. Then came Nixon, his villain was Sihanouk of Cambodia. He had to destroy that country in order to prove Sihanouk was his villain. Then came Carter, he chose Khomeini as villain. He was followed by Reagan, and he chose Gaddafi as his villain. And now we have Bush with his Saddam Hussein as his villain. But is this accidental? Is this accidental? Or is it part of U.S. policy necessitated by the fact, the significance of third world countries in relation to the United States? Not because third world countries have nuclear weapons, but because the United States contains the largest population of third world countries in its own borders more than any other country in the Western world. And this policy and this population, instead of being reflected positively in its foreign policy, it is always reflected negatively in that foreign policy. United States has a policy, positive policy towards Poland. It has positive policy toward Israel because reflecting internal situation. No foreign policy can be viable if it does not reflect internal need, the need of the people that it contains. And U.S. foreign policy reflects all these needs except the need of the black people of this country. It is never reflected on African policy. When the rest of the world were clamoring for sanctioning South Africa, United States was the one to refuse to sanction South Africa. When it has this massive population, 25 million black people in this country, daily and hourly being insulted by the very existence of apartheid in South Africa in the country. This significance of population of third world country is something we need to reflect seriously, and I think this is what Malcolm X wanted to promote. When Malcolm X came to Tanzania, I took him to meet President Nyerere on another historic date, because that very day China exploded her first nuclear bomb. And as we went to see Nyerere, Nyerere said, "Malcolm, for the first time today in recorded history, a non-colonial country has been able to develop weapons at par with any colonial power. This is the end of colonialism through." And Malcolm replied, said, "Mr. President, this is what I've been thinking all the way as I was coming from my hotel to this house." It just shows you the thinking of Malcolm, that international struggle has not limited just to one or two countries, but international struggle must be universal, literally and effectively. And this is what Malcolm had in mind, to promote internationalism of the third world. He foresaw what American policy meant and what it could mean in the event of third world population we inside America could be organized and mobilized. I'm saying that this situation is becoming even critical at this moment, because Mr. Gorbachev keeps repeating, after the end of the Cold War, he keeps repeating of the phrase "common European home." Now, this phrase is very frightening to us in Africa, especially because we remember when Europe was unified ideologically, when the five great powers were dominating Europe, i.e., Tsarist Russia, Austro-Hungarian Empire, Germany, France, and Britain before the first and second World War, we remember what this meant to the rest of the world, especially Africa. When the international trade or the world trade shifted from the Mediterranean in the 15th century to the Atlantic, that began the tragedy of Africa. And Europe was at that time unified ideologically to dominate. And the history of that period, slavery, to be followed by colonialism, to be followed by neocolonialism. This is the history of unified Africa, common European home. But this situation was saved, or at least was minimized, was relieved after the Second World War, when there was tension between East and West. And some of us, most of third world countries, utilize the tension, utilize the contradiction between East and West, and had some relief. But when that tension is over, that relief is no longer. That's why I'm saying we are passing through a very serious phase in history. Certainly third world countries, and especially Africa, is going through now. And this brings me to the significance of this conference. We have lost Big Brother, the Soviet Union, to put fear of God into U.S. foreign policy. We have lost that tension which kept some kind of peace and stability in a world scale. Where are we to turn to now, when America is extending its hegemony in a very, very vigorous way? America is unifying, or you are organizing, is having unity of a purpose of foreign policy with emerging Europe. Europe in 1992 is forming a kind of alliance or unified Europe. That Europe has a very damaging relationship with Africa, and now we have contractual damaging relationship through the so-called Lome Convention. This Lome Convention ties the entire continent of Africa and the Caribbean islands and Pacific islands to become colonies, neo-colonies of Europe. And so there is nowhere to turn except to toe the line what IMF prescribed, what the World Bank prescribed, and we have to toe the line, and the masses must suffer. Who is to salvage the situation? Who is to act as a bastion to stop the degradation? The significance of this conference, Madam Chair, is that responsibility lies on the black population in this country. It lies on the black population and the progressive forces in this country, which must be led by the progressive, the black population in this country. Your nationalism and our nationalism in Africa are the same. Our nationalism and your nationalism is nothing to do with jingoism. It is nationalism of resistance. It's a positive nationalism. And this must be expressed within the context of American hegemony. What is affecting an African in Lagos, in Tanzania, or in anywhere is the same as it affecting a black person in this country. And therefore, while we are conducting Our revolutions, the young forces are emerging in Africa to conduct our revolutions in Africa. We hope the young generation of black militants in this country will lead the struggle to ensure that United States domination does not extend into humiliating Africa once again. This is a great responsibility. This is a great responsibility, and which needs not spontaneous reaction, but organized reaction. Organized reaction. And if Malcolm was around, I'm sure this is what he would have emphasized. Because as Imam Baraka mentioned the other day, just 1 month before Malcolm was assassinated, the three of us were sitting in a hotel in New York. From 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. the next morning, talking about nothing else except the relationship between race and class. At that time, there was some confusion, which is leading whom? And I'm not going to tell you what were the conclusions, but I'm telling you one thing that Malcolm has always emphasized, that if there is a class, and if it's the oppressed class who should lead the class war, then it is the black people as a class who should lead the class war in this country. Because they have nothing to lose, literally nothing to lose except their pain. And that message, I think we could revive it now, that black population in this country have specific and unique responsibility to liberate themselves, and in the process of liberating themselves, they're liberating the rest of us. Thank you very much.